I would like to start by asking you about your new album. Will you be performing that new album when you come to Proctor's?
One of the songs from the new album, but still in the making, so there's some more work to be done before it's ready for the stage.
I was so impressed by your body of work. For my listeners, tell them, how is it that you became the first hereditary female, which is amazing, kora player?
I kind of came to it not by some big decision on my part to try and break the tradition or anything like that. This was something which came about firstly because my older brother taught me from when I was young. At the time he was studying the kora. And from the songs, I managed to have the kora in my hand for quite young. But it wasn't until I was around 16, 17 that I decided that this was an instrument that I was going to take seriously, that I was going to go and study and really focus on making it my job to work towards being a professional on it. And at that time, even then, it was not my ambition to be, you know, doing it as a female. It's the only instrument that related to me, and it's the only instrument that stayed with me through all of the years that I was growing up. After studying many other instruments, it was still the one that sat with me well. So I decided that, yeah, this was something I want to take seriously, and I decided to go to my dad and ask him, you know, if he would accept to teach me, especially being a female. Thank God he did.
So I heard you in a previous interview where you talked about the energy that's required to play the kora, and you say you don't normally sing and play at the same time because one requires a female energy and the kora requires a male energy. What did you mean by that?
Well, the kora is a male tradition for a reason. And if you go into history, the function of music and, of course, therefore instruments in society all have their very particular roles. And the kora has a very particular role, and it always has historically had a very particular role in society, and it's always been linked to empire building, the role that of its involvement with the king and so on at the time when, you know, griots used to be those people that even used to join the king on the battlefield. So this is a male tradition in nature. Females in Mandenk society have a very particular place in traditional society, just as men do. And females is very much taboo for females to be involved in any part of life that is taking life away, which is, of course, war or even hunting and so things like that, because women are the ones who bring life, so they should not be related with things that are to do with taking life, and that is exclusively a male domain. So this is where the historical roots of the male tradition, because music in Africa always has a social function. So now, obviously, we're in modern times. You know, the music is becoming something that is becoming isolated by itself. It doesn't have to be tied to a traditional context or cultural context. It can be performed and listened to as something to appreciate for the sake of just music. So this is a fairly recent thing in relation to the history of, you know, 700 years of actual cultural relevance for this instrument. So for me to access the tradition, for me to access this instrument, and to access what I feel is the old spirit of this instrument, because that's where my passion lies, is the older repertoire, the older songs, that's what I learned from my dad. And for me to access that, that's what I really had to try and feel. I have to embrace that masculine energy behind the songs because of what they mean, because of what they stand for, because of what they represent. And for singing, it's something I came to much later in life. It's something that for me is a different energy altogether, and of course represents me, I think, more on my feminine side.
So for my listeners, a griot is a storyteller, basically, but a lot more than a storyteller in the West African tradition. He is the person who maintains the cultural and oral traditions of a nation, of a group of people.
Yes, I think that is the most important part of the griot. I mean, storyteller is like the surface. It's like saying that the role of a politician is to talk. You could say that, but it's really, what is the point of them? You know, what is it behind it? What is it, the speech? What is it that their job is to do? And the power of the griot is really, in fact, I think through the years, been the glue before Mandeng society has been the glue and the identity that has been allowed it to continue for so long. Otherwise, definitely we would not see the tradition survive in the way they have today if it had not been for this tradition going on. It's like the cultural relevance of the griot is like the fabric of that society. Without the griot, for example, you can't even have a naming ceremony, you can't have a wedding, you cannot have a legitimate really cornerstone events in people's lives cannot take place without the presence of the griot. So the griot is really central in much of cultural Mandeng society still to this day.
And so Mandeng, that is a group, is that a tribe, is that a nation within Gambia? Who are Mandeng?
Okay, so the Mandinka people are, it's a group of people by the descendants of the Mandeng Empire, which was around the 13th century, one of the biggest empires in West Africa. It's now the Mandinkas are the people, and they are the people who have now spread across to different countries in West Africa because of the expansion of that empire since it's gone. The people that settled, the Mandinka people who settled in those other countries, have still remained. So although, you know, now, okay, I'm identified as Gambian, you know, prior to the existence of that colonial construction of Gambia, the main identity and still the strong force of the identity is that of being Mandinka.
And when you sing, what language are you singing in?
The first album, I actually used a few different languages because of the fact that I think I was still very much exploring my identity, my connection to the tradition, my different connections, different influences as well. So I chose to sing in a few different languages. I have Mandinka, which is the language of my family, so that's Gambia, but I also use Bambara and I also use Fula, you know, what my great-grandmother was Fula. And I had always been very much inspired by the Fula tradition, so this is why I wanted to write that song and to sing it. But the new album and everything I'm doing now is exclusively only in Mandinka.
So how would you describe your music?
I think that's a little bit like trying to describe what it's like to breathe. I don't know. It is just me. I think that's the best thing I can say. I mean, I always turn to other people to describe my music because it's something that I find very difficult. It's based on the kora, based on the kora repertoire. But I stick very much to making sure that all of my repertoire is original composition, so I don't just play the traditional songs, even though I have learned them, and of course they have meant, you know, been the cornerstone of my development as a musician. But I don't perform the traditional repertoire. I perform my own repertoire, which is compositions based on the tradition.
I enjoy listening to you, and I can definitely see and feel the passion that you bring to the music. It is extraordinary. I've been reading all about the work you're doing with the Gambia Academy of Music and Culture, and it seems to me that, you know, you're trying to do more than just be a musician.
Music, for me, is a unique way of uniting people, sensitizing people, inciting change. And for me, without those ingredients, the music, for me, becomes totally useless. So although I can say, yes, of course, I love music, and music is something that is my passion and something, you know, but I can do that in my room, you know, and it will be the same for me. Playing and performing in my room, it feels the same as when I go out on stage and play to people. But what's different is that the moment you place yourself in front of people, you have a chance to represent something. And we have so much that we have to do in just our country alone. This music, for me, is a means to bring people together to work on change where it's necessary, and also sensitization where it's necessary.
So for my listeners who are just tuning in, you're listening to my interview with Sonia Jabarte, the first female kora virtuoso, an amazing woman with a big vision. Sonia, tell me a little bit about the Gambia Academy of Music and Culture. Why did you establish it, and what's the goal?
So this is the Academy's mission is, in fact, to be the realization of social change that I want to see on the ground. We have had, over the years, many, many initiatives coming into the country that I've seen rise and fall without much change. And I think mostly because of the fact that everything is temporal. We lack permanent organizations and permanent institutions on the ground that can establish real networks to facilitate change, growth, and development in countries like the Gambia. So for me, it's the reason why I'm setting this up is to set an example as what I believe is necessary, along with some of the other things that, of course, help, such as politics and so on. But at the end of the day, we still have people on the ground who don't have that connection to that 1% of the population, that we need to actually give something to those people to enable them to be part of social change, since that is actually the majority demographic of the country. A lot of people don't have access to literacy, things like electricity even is still a struggle. And so therefore we obviously face these massive hurdles when it comes to entrepreneurship, to business, to the growth of the economy, and all the difficulties that we face, because not enough people are having that opportunity to get the skills, tools, and support that they need to be able to get on that ladder. And so for me, what better medium to use than something that absolutely every single citizen of that country has equal access to? That is music, and that is culture. Every single Gambian has equal access to those two things. We use that as a tool to be able to target people, to be able to reach people, to be able to educate people, and also to bring change amongst the majority population of the Gambia.
So young people can come to your academy, they can learn traditional music, and can they get a standard education there? You know, the what we call the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic?
So, I mean, the academy is actually opening in September 2019. The department is what has been running for the past 2.5 years, which is what I set up in 2015. And that is children between the ages of 8 to 18 years. So, yes, it's a full-time school that currently is still running. And they have a full-time normal education. I say normal, but in the Gambia, that's not normal. That's like specialist education to be able to get dedicated teachers who teach math, science, English, geography, you name it, at a high level. But at the same time, we have an integrated music curriculum that runs alongside it, where the children also are educated to centralize themselves as Africans rather than as outsiders coming in. So there is about, for me, creating a mentality that makes them think of their location, their identity first, and access education from their 2 feet on the ground where they actually are living, and see how they can apply that to their own life. So it's a very important mission for me to do that to young people in Africa, so that they can think a bit differently about the assets that they actually have in their own country. So this is something that has been running, and the only reason that now we are finally managing to expand now is because of the success of the junior department. We've reached capacity now, and we need bigger facilities to take on more students. So the junior department will now be one half of the campus, and there will be the senior department for both national and international students. That's, like I said, that's opening next year, September.
So for my listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to my interview with Sona Jabarte. She is going to be performing at Proctor's during the Passport series. That will be Wednesday night, October 10th at 7:30 p.m. at Proctor's in Schenectady, New York. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to be on 105.3 FM, the Sanctuary for Independent Media. This is Lavonia Mallory, and I will be down front listening to you and enjoying your concert. Thank you again.